Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't let streaks or smearing on your windshield compromise your visibility. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see our selection. Our professional parts people will even install your new wiper blades while you wait. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
46% of Americans expect to leave behind financial obligations when they pass away, so it's crucial to make sure your family is financially protected. Policy Genius helps you find the right life insurance coverage by comparing options from America's top insurers with help from licensed, award-winning agents. Secure your financial future with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get free life insurance quotes in just a few clicks. That's policygenius.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode number 34 of The Hunting Collective. I'm Ben O'Brien, and today I am in Kona, Hawaii, at the home of legendary surfer and all-around badass Shane Dorian. Shane's a great friend of mine, somebody I admire greatly for the way he raises his kids, the way he lives his life, all the achievements he's had in his long career in surfing, and the things he still does today. But one of my favorite things about the guy is that he loves bow hunting, and that's really all he thinks about. It's all he thinks about, and it's the most exciting thing in his life right now besides his wife and kids. And if he could hunt every day, I'm pretty sure this guy would. And hopefully that comes through in episode number 34 of the podcast. We were on Hawaii to run around, have a good time with our bows in tow. And it was a memorable experience to be there with Shane. So without further ado, Shane Dorian. Shane Dorian.
Hi.
Hi. How you doing, man?
Hi, Ben O'Brien.
How are you?
We're doing a podcast, aren't we?
We are. Yeah, we are.
Fine. We've been talking about doing this podcast for like a long time
it's
now.
It's me bothering you, really. Like, yeah. Hey, you're like, I just want to hunt. I'm like, kinda. We got to record us talking.
I guess, in truth, I've been avoiding doing this podcast for a pretty long time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been, I finally just like hunting you down to do this.
Yeah.
But you just like, nowadays, you just like to go hunting. Right. I mean, it's not, you don't want to be on podcasts
or
be filmed.
No.
Or be photographed or be made to do things. You just want to hunt.
But if it means I get to go hunting, I will.
Yeah. So that's it. Sacrifice.
And so how good of an idea was it for me to avoid doing this podcast until now? Because you had to come all the way to Hawaii, come hang out and hunt.
Hopefully
with me.
None of my Meat Eater Inc. bosses are listening to this.
Yeah, that's right.
But yes, podcasts take you places like this.
So this is the first of a two-part podcast that'll be continued in 2019.
Yeah. We're going to actually just stop talking at some point to be continued.
That's right.
So we can go back, camp, be under the stars. Like, so we're in Hawaii. We're on the Big Island. And last night's moon, like where we were camping, the stars was unbelievable. Like blew me away. Like Hawaii sometimes just shocks you, even though you know tourists come here because it's beautiful, but still shocks you.
Yeah, there's something about, I think if you're not from Hawaii or haven't spent time here, the mountains is not something that you really think of. When you think of Hawaii, you're not thinking about how beautiful the mountains might be, but when you're up in the mountains camping with your buddies and the fire's going and everyone's telling stories, drinking cold beers after hunting all day, doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah, last night definitely was that good. But now we're at the Dorian residence. And done hunting and getting ready to fly back to Montana. I don't want to go back. I'd like to stay here.
How cold is it in Montana right now?
It's got to be like 20 degrees, man.
It's probably snowing.
Yeah. It's like 72 degrees here.
Yeah.
And beautiful.
It's great.
For those that don't know, well, let's go back to when you were a young Grom, as you guys say down here.
Yeah.
Surfing. I mean, most folks will know you as being a big wave surfer, but you grew up doing, you know, surfing, living in Hawaii, living that lifestyle. Give people a snapshot of what that was like, when you came up.
I think pretty much nobody who listens to your podcast knows who the hell I am. So, who is
Steve? They're like that guy that hunts with Cam Haynes.
Yeah. My story is basically I was born and raised in a little town called Kona on the Big Island of Hawaii, and just grew up in the 70s and grew up surfing. My family had a little restaurant down at the beach, and so I just grew up on the sand every day. That's where I learned to walk and learned to swim and learned to body surf and learned to fish and learned to, go diving and all that stuff. So I just kind of, grew up in the ocean and made all my friends through surfing, and that's kind of what I did every summer, every school break, after school. It's kind of consumed everything.
Yeah. Were there any, when you're growing up, were there like some, there's so much culture here, there's so many shared ideas, just the way it happens in this part of the world. Looking back on your childhood, were there anything that, any philosophies or just ways of life that made you who you are today? Like the big ideas?
I think, probably being really respectful at a really young age is like integral and kind of mandatory in Hawaii. Like, in Hawaii we have this dynamic between the local Hawaiian people who have been here for, hundreds of years and had a totally undisturbed lifestyle for a very long time before, white people, whatever you want to call them, got here and basically changed everything. And so there's still this dynamic that is there. And so I think it just the vibe in Hawaii is really awesome and it's really great. But I think you just kind of learn to really respect everybody and show people respect in Hawaii. It's kind of, if you don't do that, you like learn pretty quickly that this is not the place for you. So that's definitely something I think that is, I think no matter where you visit in Hawaii, that's something that, I don't know how to explain that really in any other way, but, and it's not, I'm sure it's like that everywhere in the world, but, definitely in Hawaii, it really stands out a lot.
Yeah, I mean,
especially
it does
growing up,
out.
Being in school and being around, just a lot of people and this and that. It definitely stands out.
Yeah, I mean, there's just certain places in the world where like a Hollywood producer would come and be like, I can make a show out of that.
Yeah,
because there's connective tissue things that happen here that just don't happen in other places.
Yeah,
there's a lot of TV shows based in Louisiana around the Cajun culture,
right.
What that means.
Yeah,
this the Hawaiian culture is. Similarly interesting to me because there's just a lot of things that go on here that don't in other places. I'm sure it's, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but there's, food and family and, everybody's an uncle, that culture is powerful.
Yeah.
To me.
It's funny. I feel like, in the U.S., the two states that are more like their own countries are Hawaii and Texas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not that I visited everywhere in the U.S., but Texas really kind of stands out as having its own culture, having things that are really like unique to Texas.
Yeah.
And I feel like Hawaii is kind of the same thing. If you come to Hawaii, it's almost, you feel like you went out of the country. It's totally different culture, different kind of people, different kind of food, different kind of way of life. It's just, but I like it a lot. I like the slow pace of life. And I've traveled a lot in my life and Hawaii has always been the place I always wanted to come home to and happy to be born and raised here.
Yeah. I mean, in your late teens and you surf throughout your childhood, but in your late teens, things started to get serious.
Yep. Yeah. So I got really into the surfing thing and got pretty good at it. So I started doing a lot of like amateur competitions and then I ended up wanting to pursue it as a, whatever you want to call that, as a job, I guess. And so I moved over to Oahu by myself and went to high school there, kind of put myself, I'd work in the summers here at home on the Big Island. And then I would save up my money and I ship my car over to Oahu each year and stay there to surf big waves and, train and compete against all the best kids. And then I graduated high school and kind of chased my dream to become a pro surfer, which is, you know, I basically traveled around the world for about 15 years competing full time.
And you had, you're telling me about a documentary that's coming out on HBO that kind of chronicles that time, you know, that time in your life and the friends you came up with and the filmmakers you worked with. And like there's some revolutionary shit going on there.
Yeah, it's kind of a, it's a funny story that we never really thought would be told in this way. But yeah, it's called The Momentum Generation, and it's a documentary film that's being put out by HBO, and it's really good. Actually, it's great. It kind of chronicles a time that was set in like the late 90s, early 2000s, actually like mid 90s, early 2000s. Where our group of friends that were all the same age and really good at surfing, we're all kind of coming up. A few of us from Hawaii, a few of us from California, a couple from Florida. And then we all basically became friends because we were all pursuing the same dream. And a lot of us came kind of like from broken homes and kind of crazy families. And then so being on the road, like our friend, our sort of our friendship became our family. And so we traveled together and hung out together and lived together for like 10 years. And it kind of tells that story. It's pretty cool.
Pretty cool. Yeah, transformative for you. I mean, like, I can't begin to ask you. Like, I'm sure there's a million stories you could tell about that time. Like, how many countries did you surf in? How many places did you go? How many nights did you spend in hotels or hostels or wherever the hell you stayed?
Yeah. Like, we would basically, there was a group of us that were kind of like between 8 and 12 people, and we would go to like a European leg of the tour where we'd surf in France, Spain, and Portugal and do like two events in each country or three events in each country. And so we'd be there for like two and a half months of the year. And we'd go and we'd rent a couple houses and rent a few rental cars. And so there'd be like six of us in each rental car with like a, with like giant board bags. Like each one of us would have like six or eight boards in a big board bag on top of the car. And this is back in the day when there's no phones. You're like, you'd literally have like a map, like a rental car map. And it'd be like driving from Spain to Portugal or to France. And we were just a bunch of little kids, like, you know, 19, 20 years old. And we'd get there and the place we thought we had, we didn't have. So we'd end up like sleeping on the beach in our board bags and freezing to death. And then we'd have to surf in contests the next day. But we kind of just like grew up on airplanes and grew up traveling by ourselves with no parental supervision and no one telling us to, you know, go to sleep early, no one telling us to prepare for the contest, no one telling us to not chase girls, no one, you know. And it was a really fun time to be that age and a really amazing way to grow up, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, would you how would you categorize that? Reckless living, or was it calculated? Like, we're driven, I want to win, I'm here to win? Or was it more just like, I'm having a good time rolling my boys, doing my thing?
It was more of the latter for me. I mean, that's what's interesting about the story. And if anybody wants to see the film, it'll be on HBO really soon here, depending on when people listen to the podcast. But I think it's like November 11th on HBO 2018. It'll be out there for everybody to see on HBO. So, for me and a few of the guys, we were more casual. I was trying really hard to win, and I was competing and trying to compete for a world title. And for a few years, I definitely got really serious. But there was a couple of us that became extremely serious, like pursuing those goals and pursuing the world title year after year. And it really took its toll personally on for those couple people. And then it also took a toll on our friendship, just in general. And so that's a really there's a lot of parts of that story that are really interesting. But our collective group is still super, super tight now that we're kind of like, most of us are retired from full-time competition. There's only one of us, Kelly Slater, that is doing his last full year right now of competition. Yeah. So we're still a very tight-knit group of friends that we're all, most of us are all in our 40s now. So yeah, we could kind of like look back on that time of growing up and just go, what the hell? How do we get so lucky? You know, because that was a wild way to grow up and a wild way to be, you know, 18 years old. And I was too young to rent a car, and I was traveling, you know, like 80% of the time out of the country.
Crazy, man.
Yeah, it was nuts.
And you never, like, I find with things like that, you guys didn't plan. That was just what you did to surf.
Yeah.
Like, you just did it to surf.
Oh, man.
I mean,
I was like, what? what job can I do to where I can surf as much as possible and see the most of the world and surf the most waves? And
welcome to everybody in the hunting industry.
Like,
what job can I do so I can hunt the most, see the world, shoot my bow?
That's right.
Be with my buds.
There's a lot of parallels, right?
Yeah, there is a lot of parallels.
Yeah.
Because if there was a hunting world tour, goddamn right, I'd be on it.
Yeah.
Dude, I'd make you come with me. We'd go roll around.
That's the goal. Someday we're on, you know, we're going to be on the bow hunting world tour.
Bow hunting world tour.
We'll just make it up in our minds.
Yeah, we'll just say, hey, we're going on the world tour, honey. Yeah. We'll be back in a couple months.
Everyone's like, what are you talking about?
It's the world tour. It's the world. It's very costly. We're poor. But I mean, you were telling me, like, most surfers, even today, are poor. Like,
oh yeah, even the pro surfers. We're talking about that. It's like there's a lot of people that are really chasing the dream, and they just doing it just because they love the lifestyle and want to travel and see the world, and that's their dream is to you know, surf full time. Yeah. So it's definitely a grind. From the outside it looks really, you know, there's a lot of upside there, but if you do it for a living, it's like everything has its good parts and its bad parts, but I've been really lucky. I've been doing it for a very long time, so.
Yeah, I mean, and what you do is dangerous. It's not, for those who aren't initiated to what exactly Shane is talking about, you have to go, just search Shane Dorian Jaws, or really just Shane Dorian Surfing, and watch the videos of this man going down a wall of water. How many stories high?
Yeah, like 60 feet or something.
60 feet high, and surfing along it like it's nothing. And doing that day after day in those types of scenarios, or year after year. Like, can you describe to people kind of what it is to undertake something like that? I mean, to truly... Next question.
You can't.
Next question.
Yeah, so I mean, I competed full-time for like 11 or 12 years, or like 15 years really, but like anyway... And then I got really burnt out on competition, and then I decided to stop competing. So I decided to stop competing and pursue big wave surfing. So I was always super passionate about chasing big swells around, and I never really had the time when I was competing full time. So I ended up putting a lot of time and effort into chasing giant waves as soon as I was done competing, and that became my focus and my... That's what I was just like super motivated to do. And so I would train year round and get really physically and mentally, psychologically fit for surfing the kind of waves that no one wants to surf. And I love it. I still do it. Yeah.
You were saying that in the ride up here today that it's not there's physical parts of what you do on the big wave side, but it's mental. It's like, what's that look like in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, as far as like, I mean, like we're talking about the kind of waves that a lot of people have drowned in. I've lost like a lot of friends who have died surfing big waves, and in those kind of conditions, it's like, you know, you might wait 6 months for one of those swells or a year for one of those swells, and on that day when the waves are giant, you know, I mean, that's a call that Mother Nature makes. That's not something that you're like, okay, in May, in the second week of May, the waves are going to be giant.
Yeah,
you just have to be like totally prepared all the time. And that's what's really different about surfing is if you have a cough or you have a cold or you have a sore ankle or whatever, it doesn't matter. The waves are still going to be 60 feet that day and the best day in years. So just one of those things, you got to be continuously prepared for that. And that's what's really unique about surfing giant waves. And so from a mental perspective, it's a lot of like being prepared, training, making sure you have all the right equipment, making sure your boards and all your gear is all dialed and that you're physically and mentally fit all the time.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there because they're great and they're super friendly and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/meat eater. That's OReillyAuto.com/meat eater. Hey, everybody knows Weber grills. I've been using Weber grills my whole life, and check it out. They got a pellet grill, the Weber Searwood pellet grill. Now, with a pellet grill, you can smoke, roast, and sear, what I like to do, on the same grill. You can go from low and slow, okay, on smoke boost mode, which gives you great smoke at 180 degrees, or crank this thing all the way to a heat sear at 600 degrees. It's got a full great sear zone, so you can put more food on the flame. This is my way of bold saying. If I was going to cook roast one way, that's how I like to do it, sear roast. Utilize the smoke boost setting to intensify that smoky flavor. Direct flame cooking creates searing, crisping, and browning. Food is going to look as good as it tastes. This grill gets hot in 15 minutes. Cleanup is easy. Cook confidently with intuitive digital controls at the grill and enjoy the sleek, easy-to-use surface. You can also add a heavy-duty rotisserie or rust-resistant griddle insert to up your game. Get fired up for your new Weber Searwood pellet grill. Pay attention here, because this is a hell of a good service. It's called the Wellness Company. Picture this, okay? You wake up, you got a scratchy throat, you're all congested, you got a runny nose, you got a cough, whatever. And you weigh your options, like you tough it out, get sick, take time off work, try to get a doctor's appointment sometime in the next few months, wait 2 hours at urgent care and sit in a room full of six sick folks, or you open your medical emergency kit. You match your symptoms to the doctor recommended prescription and you start on the right meds right away. These medical emergency kits, not a first aid kit, all right? It comes with doctor prescribed meds to treat over 39 medical issues. So, on hand, strong antibiotics for infections of all types. Plus, a doctor's easy guide so you know exactly what to take and when. No waiting to see the doctor, no waiting at the pharmacy. It's all in there. Every home should have at least one medical emergency kit. Order yours online in minutes. Your kit will be rushed to your door. Get 15% off at twc.health/meat eater, but you got to use the promo code meat eater. That's promo code meat eater, okay, at twc.health/meat eater.
It's rain. Oh, is that rain? That's good.
Yeah, that's rain.
That way it just started raining. We were wondering what that noise was.
Yeah, I was like, it's weird in the headphones. I couldn't really tell what that was.
What?
Is the rain okay?
Oh, yeah, the rain's great.
It doesn't get too crazy.
It makes it calm.
It's very calming.
Our voices can become, oh, yes, it's raining.
For those who are listening but can't see where we are, it's pretty sweet here, huh?
Dude, your house. Yeah, man, when I first came up here, I'm like, I can't imagine Shane Dorian like not living on the living on the beach.
Right.
And I got here, I'm like, this is better. Like, you have a view of the ocean. It's not like an ocean view, but you can see the ocean.
Yeah.
But there's all this native forest around here. It's a legit jungle. I mean, that's how I would describe it. I mean, it's beautiful.
Yeah, we're at 4,000 feet elevation and in a native rainforest and wild boars running around and you can just jump off the deck with your bow and
go run around, get chase nuts. Wild boars. Yeah, man. I every time I come to Hawaii, I feel like I've never vacationed in Hawaii. I don't know what it's like to go to a Hawaiian resort and like drink Mai Tais. And
yeah.
I don't know what that's like. I've only ever hunted here.
Neither do I.
I've only ever hunted here. Every time I hunt here, I think like this place is badass. I don't want to tell, you know, I don't really want to tell many people. Luckily, not a lot of people listen to this, but it's just like I don't know if it's New Zealand's a little bit like this too. It's just like the way these islands function, the different animals, the different feeling when you come here. It's hard to describe, but you know it well. I mean, it's just, you know, you've hunted around, I've hunted around. I would say that the hunting here on the Big Island and here on Lanai or wherever is as unique as it gets. Like, just, it's a different, we have our North American model of conservation, but this one is, this is not that.
No, it's definitely a lot different than your mainland sort of setup.
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. We'll get back to that. I want to get through the, we'll get through the surfing part because we have to. then we'll get to the hunting part because we want to. But where were we with your surfing?
Yeah, I mean, that's
the mental state of riding a 60-foot fucking wave and not dying or, you know, putting yourself in that, like, immense danger willingly.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is. It's just, like, being on your game is no different from, like, being, this is going to sound cheesy, but, like, being, like, doing any super dangerous job, like being a race car driver or whatever. It's just, like, you have to be 100% committed and, in that moment, you can have no hesitation and no, there's no like aspect of your mindset that's like, oh, maybe this is a bad idea. You have to be like, fuck yeah, I'm doing this.
Fuck
yeah. And no matter what happens, no matter what the outcome is, this is happening right now.
Yeah.
And so it's cool. It's kind of like liberating in a way to like leave a lot up to Mother Nature and the whatever's happening in the universe at that time and just being out there in the ocean on the biggest swell of the year and being like, I'm going to go out there and bring my experience and my skill and see if I have what it takes to make it all happen.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking again on the way over here at some point during our trip about a little bit about how the pressures of hunting and, you know, the position you put yourself in to get it done, to work hard and get something done in the wild places we go to do all that changes you a little bit. Like it, you know, changes your perspective on life. The way that, yeah, you're more pragmatic. You're a little bit, your anxiety is a little bit less because you know that wild place is out there and you can disconnect and you can have that. Is there something in surfing when you know that you're going out there to chase that danger or to put yourself in that position? Does that change the way you live your life? Does it change your mental acuity or like how you see the world around you when you come back to society?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's there's no way to talk about it without sounding kind of cheeseball, but the extreme intensity of the situations you put yourself in with really giant waves and are those experiences are so extreme.
Yeah.
You feel like you're like really, really pushing it as a human. Like you're at the edge of like where you should be, way past your comfort level. And sometimes you get yourself in a position where you never intended to, you know? Yeah. So, you know, when that day's over and the swell goes away and you get back home, everything just seems so relaxed and the stress level is so low and there's nothing to worry about. You're not going to die in the ocean today. And, you know, and for me, I have, you know, two kids and a wife at home and I got a lot to lose. I don't surf big waves because I can get really close to dying. That's not what I'm doing it. No. I love surfing big waves. I love the challenge and I love the camaraderie with the guys who choose to surf big waves. I have great friendships and I just love it. I dig it. And so like the danger aspect is not why I do it.
Yeah.
Part of the dangerous aspect is probably why it's so exciting, but I love the excitement and the challenge for sure.
Yeah.
And just trying to, I think the thing I like about it most is like the mental test. Yeah. The mental test of in that moment, can you keep your shit together? Can you maintain that focus and really rely on all the millions of experiences you've had in the past to bring yourself to this one moment where it's all on the line?
Yeah.
I dig that.
Yeah.
And I think that's super, super similar to why I'm so drawn to bow hunting. I feel like that same, I've never felt anything like that with life. Any other experience, any other sport, any other anything where I feel like they line up almost identical. The feeling, the emotions that I get when I'm bow hunting. Because surfing's like that. It's like tranquil and cool and you're hanging out with your buddies and everything's awesome and you love it and you do it for the experience. And then all of a sudden you get these really intense like climax moments where it's all on the line.
Yeah.
And it's really, really high stress situation where you have to keep your cool. And I feel like bow hunting's the same way.
It is, man.
Yeah.
And it really, like, this week, this last couple of days hunting really, like, codified it in my mind that all those things are so similar that there's such good around the moment, that critical moment where you have to let that arrow fly and do it in such a way that is, you know, kills the animal and kills it humanely and you do your job because it matters. Like, it matters in that in that sense of the word. But everything surrounding it is awesome. Like, we were leaving your house to drive out to camp. We were kind of like giddy little, like, let's go, man. My bow's on.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Like, it's shooting good. It's shooting good. We're going to have a great time, man. We're going to go. We're going. We're going. We're going. And then we got there. We're like, we're here. We're fucking here.
Yeah.
And then we're
like little kids, man.
Yeah. Walking around in the rain, go, we're doing it, man.
We got our rain gear.
We got our rain gear. Let's put it on.
This shit's badass.
It's raining.
It's working.
Look how dry I am.
Yeah, it's the best.
It's fucking great. It is so good.
Yeah.
And then, like, all that kind of goes away in a moment where you are now, it's just you and the animal. There's nothing I can do to help. There's nothing that you can do to help me.
Yeah.
There is no way that anyone could sit beside you in that moment and tell you what to do. Like, you have to do it yourself. And I guess the different thing about your surfing and hunting is that usually in hunting, no one is watching.
Yeah.
Like, you internalize the pressure and you put it on yourself because you know that you owe it to the animal. You know, you've worked hard for this, but it's all internalized. There's no, I've said this on the podcast before, like Jim Nance isn't over there going, and Shane Dorian steps up, draws his bow.
Yeah.
And
imagine
shoots.
That.
Imagine if that was what was really going on. And that was happening in live, you would completely change what you were doing. But hunting is an internal mechanism that you apply pressure to yourself because you know how important it is to kill that thing for many reasons.
Well, I mean, in the moment of truth for me with surfing, if I screw up, everybody sees it.
Yeah.
In the moment of truth, if I'm bow hunting, if I screw up, nobody sees it.
Yeah.
That's my bad. And that's my bad arrow that went flying into the animal in the wrong spot in the animal.
Yeah.
That's me who wounded the animal. And I have to live with that, but I don't have to tell anybody about that. No, I didn't shoot any arrows today. Oh, I didn't have any luck.
Oh, it's fine.
And meanwhile, there's some elk like limping over there, you know, it's like, so I think those are those things like in bow hunting that are really unique to bow hunting. It's like in those moments, there's a lot, I think, and I think that's part of the draw of bow hunting too, because you have to make those decisions and make those choices all by yourself.
Yeah. And then you got to come back. Yeah. You got to come back and report to the world, however you do that, whether it's just your buddies in camp or you're sharing it with social media or whatever. There's you could just be virtuous, right? You could just tell the story that makes you look the best or makes hunting look the best.
Yeah.
Or you could tell the true story, which is this shit is messy. Sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes you screw up. Sometimes you feel like you're the best bow hunter in the world. And then the next day you feel like the worst. Like, and I don't care who you are.
Yeah, even the best bow hunters make big mistakes.
I'm telling you. We've both hunted with some of the best in the world. And there's mistakes made.
Yeah.
And there's animals wounded. Or there's animals that take four arrows.
Yeah.
That just happens to everyone. And if it doesn't happen to you, please call in.
Yeah, let us know your secrets.
Let us know your secrets. I know there is no call-in line.
Yeah, but call in anyway.
Call in anyway. But that I just think it always has one thing in having these podcast conversations that I've realized is exactly that. Like, hunting is internal to you. Like, you have the ability to shape your the way you function in the woods, the way you think about animals, all those things, and share that with the world. But when it comes down to making that shot, it's you.
Yeah. Well, and you can come back, you know, you can come back to camp with your bow and just say, nope, I didn't get a shot, even though you wounded an animal. But it doesn't matter if you tell the truth to your friends or your buddies or not. You got to live with that truth.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't lie to yourself.
Yeah.
You know, I've fucked it up on a shot before and couldn't sleep at night thinking about that animal.
Yeah.
So that's just something that as a bow hunter, you need to own up to and deal with and do the best you can do, you know, but like, nobody's born a perfect bow hunter either.
It's
a long learning curve to become a good bow hunter.
Yeah. And you've experienced that. I mean, you're one of the growing number of people that took on hunting later in life, you know, I would say.
Oh yeah.
And you went through a lot of what I went through as a kid in your 30s on your own.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people, whether you know it or not, but I do just from people that write in and talk to me about this podcast and just any other thing. There's a lot of people that are listening to, you know, our mutual friends like Dudley and Remy and Joe Rogan and going and wanting to go hunting and picking it up when they're 35 and have three kids and need someone to tell them how to do it.
Yeah,
or what to do, or how to think. When I was a kid, you just shot the deer. We didn't talk about the philosophies around it, or the ideologies or why it was important to the natural world or any of that shit. We just shot the deer and had fun doing it and never questioned it. And then here you are, you're in your, you know, your 30s, you pick up a bow. Now you have the ability, you're an adult. You have kids by then, yeah, probably.
I started bow hunting right before my wife got pregnant with my son, my first kid.
Yeah. So you're married, you're having, you're starting a family, and here you are, you know, doing a lot of big things in the world, and you're probably more equipped to take up hunting, right? Is that just a...
Yeah, more mature. More mature. For sure, yeah.
Describe how you got your first bow and how you got started, because it's pretty good story.
Yeah, well, for me, I haven't really ever known anything except for surfing, really. And, I always like grew up at the beach, and my work was at the beach and the ocean. So I was always like traveling to places it's always the beach, right? So I always fantasized about living up on the mountain, like where I live, where it wasn't hot, where the ocean wasn't right across the street, where the surfing wasn't like a 1 minute walk. So, you know, I ended up getting some property and building a house way up in the mountains at 4,000 feet. And, as soon as I started living here, everything I would plant would get dug up by wild boars. You know, I mean, there's just wild boars everywhere. And so they would just destroy everything. And so my buddy gave me a gun and said, if you shoot a couple, they'll scram and probably not come back for a while. And so I shot two, and immediately realized that I'm not a gun person. So I gave the gun back to my buddy. I have nothing against guns, but I just knew they weren't for me. Just the noise and the vibe. I don't know. It just wasn't my thing. And so my neighbor was a bow hunter, and I became friends with him. So I'd go over there and drink a couple beers in the afternoon and shoot arrows. And so when I got a pretty good grouping, he took me bow hunting. He had a couple tree stands on his property.
Yeah.
And the huge boar came in that night, and I fucked everything up. I tried to put an arrow on, and then I drew back, and my arrow went flying off the rest and ding, 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 made the noise, and all pigs went bolting into the forest. But I was hooked. I was like, this is so hard. I just screwed everything up. The animals were right there. They had no idea. Just everything came together. And the next day I went and bought a used Matthews. The next day I was like, this is it. I want to become a bow hunter.
And you said you bought it from the Hawaiian Ted Nugent?
I bought it from this guy who lives down the street from my house that sells archery gear out of his house, out of his like spare bedroom. Because at the time there was no archery shop,
right? Yeah, man.
So he had a bunch of used bows and literally used broadheads and some new ones too. But I was like, I would go and get like 100 grain muzzies and used 125 grain, and he's like, they're all shoot the same, it's all good. And so I just grew up, I just, my whole start to bow hunting, I had no mentor of really like, hey, get this bow, here's the kind of arrows you want to shoot, here's how you want to stand, here's how you do it, here's the cheat sheets, you know, here's the Cliff's Notes to everything you need to know. I kind of did every like bad move in the book. And then I realized a really, really good older friend, a really good friend of mine who's about 10 years older than I am, I ended up going hunting with him, starting to hunt rams up in the mountains. And he was just a really accomplished bow hunter. He'd been bow hunting. He's in his 50s at the time, and he'd been bow hunting since he was like 7 years old. And bow hunting that whole time consistently. Him, his brothers, uncles, grandpa, everybody, bow hunters. So he took me under his wing and taught me a ton. And then I started hunting like every week. I'd hunt like 1 or 2 days a week every week for like maybe 5 years. So I was getting hundreds of days in the field.
Yeah.
And that's just here. And I was starting to go to Maui, Molokai, Lanai. And so I was getting like, you know, I was hunting like 100 days a year, so some years.
Damn.
Or maybe a little bit less than that, but a lot. And in Hawaii, there's no bag limit. I mean, you better have a full quiver if you go out in Hawaii and hunt. If you, you know, there's a lot that can happen.
We found out this week.
Yeah. There's a lot of hunts you come back with one arrow or no arrows. So I went from like 0 to 100 real quick.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that's how you live your life. It makes sense. Yeah. But yeah, I mean.
But I felt like I found it late, and I wanted to make up for lost time.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I was like, I love this so much. I'm pissed that I didn't find it earlier. I was actually angry that I didn't have a dad who hunted, that I grew up and had those memories of like being in the mountains with my old man. was so jealous of friends like that, and I grew up with a bow in their hand. So I was like, shit, I'm going to make the most of it. I'm 30, all my 30s, all my 40s, all my 50s, all my 60s, all my 70s, I'm going to be bow hunting my
ass
off.
To this day. Oh, you're like, dude, I'm trying to retire.
And now I'm 100.
Just bow hunt, dude.
Oh, yeah, dude. That's literally it's scary. If you knew how much I thought about bow hunting, you'd be scared.
No, I wouldn't be scared at all. I'd be happy. But yeah, I mean, it comes down to, you know, it's interesting to me. I'm trying to get my thoughts together around, like, the conversation of your start in hunting. But it's interesting to me that you take on surfing from a young age, and would you say, like, you went hard and maxed out? Is that true? Is that the right way to say that? You went hard as shit for a long time, became the best of the best, and then, like, now you here you are relatively at a young age kind of winding down that portion of your life.
Yeah.
And winding up your hunting.
Probably on the more like the professional end of the surfing part. I'm still totally obsessed and in love with surfing.
Yeah.
I love going surfing still after 40 years. I literally, like, when the waves are good and I'll go surfing with my kid and surf for hours and have the best time ever. I love it. Yeah. I choose to go surfing.
Yeah.
I don't do it because I get paid to go surfing. I dig it. And even when it has nothing to do with work for me at all, I'm going to continue going surfing because I love it.
Yeah.
It hasn't, like, somehow doing what I love for a living hasn't fucked that up, which
That's
I love
good.
That about
it's
it.
It's good
yeah.
to hear.
Yeah.
Because that can fuck it up for a lot of people. Yeah. You know, shit, even for me, I've hunted a lot over the last decade and that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just, my mind goes to, I can be home for about a week, and if I haven't thought about hunting or doing something hunting related, I get depressed, like seriously depressed. And my wife has seen that in me and has said, like, if you got to go, you got to go.
Yeah.
And we were talking about your wife as well, like, you being away, traveling the world, doing your thing. I mean, you have a job that takes you away all over the world all the time, and I do as well. But my wife said something not recently about, I'm glad that you have a passion. She was like, I'm glad, I want you to be here, and I know you want to be here, but I'm glad that you have something that you love so much that you can go do it and come back. Like, I'd much rather that than you sit around here and go to work, run the 9 to 5, and come home, watch TV. It's like, I'd much rather have that. And I was like, I love you. I love you, honey.
And that's very unusual, I think.
I know.
Yeah.
But I think she's right. I think it's true. Like, yeah. You'd much rather have that and be pulled in two directions than just pulled in one direction. You know, if it's, you know, work, family, if work is also your passion, the thing you want to do, life's way richer for that. That's for sure.
Well, there's a lot of people who are married out there whose wife fell in love with them because they were this person who had all this passion. Yeah. And then they get married, and then all of a sudden they get grief for going and doing all the things they love to do because they're not home as much.
Yeah.
And then a lot of people stop doing what they want to do and love a whole lot and stop pursuing their passions. And then for the wife, and then the wife's like, I don't like this guy anymore. He's kind of boring, yeah. You know? So it's like, you got to be unapologetically, you know, pursuing your passion no matter what.
Yeah.
That's who makes us who we are.
And yeah.
Bow hunting is part of me, is who I am now. Straight up.
Yeah.
And that's the truth, and I'm not trying to hide that fact, and my wife knows that.
Yeah.
And if I'm being a dick around the house, she'll call my buddies and be like, look, Shane's being a dick. He needs to go hunting. For real. You guys need to plan something and go hunting.
Yeah. I've got that problem. Same problem.
Yeah.
Like, around the house is an issue. But we were out there, so we're out camping, you know, in relative middle of nowhere, and like, you could see it on your face, and I'm sure you could probably see it on my face. Like, we are more comfortable and joyous and in our element in that place.
Yeah.
Take us to town, put us in an airport. We're not that.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably, I think surfing probably, I'm sure, did that for you, but hunting is just like a derivative of wanting to be away and be disconnected and be, you know, more connected. We were in camp with 5 people, and I felt like the conversation around the campfire were better than, you know, more laughs, more just bullshit than you could recreate in any circumstance.
Yeah.
No restaurant, no dinner party, nothing could recreate that.
There's just no small talk either.
Yeah.
You're just around a campfire, so yeah. It's like their silence is fine.
Yeah.
And then if you're laughing, cracking jokes, or telling hunting stories or whatever it is, great. But if you have nothing to say, you guys can just chill out.
Sit there.
Everybody's there for the same reason, you know? Just unplug for a few days.
Food tastes better.
Yeah.
All food somehow tastes better. I was eating canned tuna yesterday. I'm like, this shit is great. It's canned tuna. It's delicious. Sleep is somehow better. Like, not having a shower doesn't bother me at all when I'm in that situation.
But going to sleep dirty with face paint on your face?
Yeah.
There's something so good about that.
I borrowed one of your kids' pillows from his bed, and I felt so bad, dude.
Did you black face paint?
Black face paint, just like my face imprinted on his pillow. Yeah. Poor Jackson. But yeah, I was thinking that. I'd wake up and be like, dude, it's 5 in the morning, and I went to sleep at 10:30, and I walked 11 miles yesterday.
Yeah.
And I feel good. I don't feel tired. I don't feel depressed. I don't feel anxiety or stress. Even though the thing I'm doing is way harder than what I do on a daily basis.
Yeah.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there because they're great and they're super friendly and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/MeatEater. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/MeatEater. Hey, everybody knows Weber grills. I've been using Weber grills my whole life, and check it out. They got a pellet grill, the Weber Searwood Pellet Grill. Now, with a pellet grill, you can smoke, roast, and sear, what I like to do, on the same grill. You can go from low and slow, okay, on smoke boost mode, which gives you great smoke at 180 degrees, or crank this thing all the way to a heat sear at 600 degrees. It's got a full great sear zone, so you can put more food on the flame. This is my way of bowl staying. If I was going to cook roast one way, that's how I like to do it, sear roast. Utilize the smoke boost setting to intensify that smoky flavor. Direct flame cooking creates searing, crisping, and browning. Food's going to look as good as it tastes. This grill gets hot in 15 minutes. Cleanup is easy. Cook confidently with intuitive digital controls at the grill and enjoy the sleek, easy-to-use surface. You can also add a heavy-duty rotisserie or rust-resistant griddle insert to up your game. Get fired up for your new Weber Searwood Pellet Grill. Pay attention here, because this is a hell of a good service. It's called the Wellness Company. Picture this, okay? You wake up, you got a scratchy throat, you're all congested, you got a runny nose, you got a cough, whatever. And you weigh your options, like you tough it out, get sick, take time off work, try to get a doctor's appointment sometime in the next few months, wait 2 hours at urgent care and sit in a room full of six sick folks, or you open your medical emergency kit. You match your symptoms to the doctor-recommended prescription, and you start on the right meds right away. These medical emergency kits, not a first aid kit, all right? It comes with doctor-prescribed meds to treat over 39 medical issues. So, on hand, strong antibiotics for infections of all types. Plus, a doctor's easy guide so you know exactly what to take and when. No waiting to see the doctor. No waiting at the pharmacy. It's all in there. Every home should have at least one medical emergency kit. Order yours online in minutes. Your kit will be rushed to your door. Get 15% off at twc.health/meateater, but you got to use the promo code meateater. That's promo code meateater, okay, at TWC.health/meateater.
Anyway, I like it a lot.
Yeah, I love it too. I don't think I could ever get, I mean, I say this because I live in civilization, but like when I wake up in the middle of the night and open my eyes and I'm in a tent, and I go, shit, I'm camping. Yes, I'm in a tent. I'm in a sleeping pad.
Yeah.
Like there's something so good about it. Like I like romanticize the thought of camping, but I swear I feel like I'm like, I don't know. I just feel like I'm a better version of myself when I'm out there and dirty and hunted all day and I'm tired and I worked my ass off and got frustrated because I missed or whatever it was, like whatever the story was, whether it's success or sorrow or frustration or whatever it was. It's like just being out there with your buddies and doing what we were like, I feel like that's what I was meant to do, you know?
Yeah. And that's why like food tastes better. And even for me, I figured this out earlier this year. I've said this before on this little podcast show that every year I try to at least once a year, whenever it is, I don't just sit down on like a day, but I try to sit down once a year and re-examine my hunting. Like what's changed over, what did I learn over the last year? Like what won't I do anymore? What do I do? Whether it's gear, tactics, or just things that I won't do.
Mm-hmm.
Be like ways I won't represent myself or types of hunts I'll never do again or types of hunts I want to do every year, things like that. Like re-examine the type of hunter I am.
Yeah.
But then it comes to like trips like we just had that felt like just pure, like everything was right. The place, the people, that's when for me, you're at that heightened sense of like, it's just straight up joy.
Yeah.
We hunted in the rain. We hunted all day long. Like I said, I was eating like candy bars and shitty tuna yesterday,
yeah.
Just sitting in the sun, like loving life. No sheep around, no mouflon around to hunt, but didn't matter.
Yeah.
But didn't matter. And I can't, I wonder how people that listen to this that maybe don't hunt or have family members don't hunt hear that and it translates to them. Because I'm not sure what other people's lives have or their passion is about you and I are about bow hunting in the freaking middle of nowhere. As you know, I can't imagine sitting in a chair watching football getting anything close to what we got.
Yeah. Well, everybody has their thing that, you know, helps them deal with stress, and everybody has their thing that helps them like become who they are, a better person of who they are. And I mean, some of those people's ideas of what's good for their stress levels or whatever, like, is my worst nightmare. And sleeping in a tent and being dirty is most people's worst nightmare.
Yeah.
But that's why it's cool. That's why when I talk about bow hunting to people and they're just looking at me like, what the hell are you talking about? Cannot relate to you at all. Yeah. The hell are you doing? You're out there killing animals. You know, that's all they think it's about or whatever. And there's nothing you can tell those people to explain anything. So
it's so complex.
Don't even really try. So,
well, we were riding in to have breakfast this morning, baby wiping the face paint,
mm-hmm.
like 3-day old face paint off our faces.
Yeah.
So we could go have a pancake and not get stared at.
Yeah.
I was like, this moment is badass.
Yeah.
Like, you have it. And I was thinking the same thing around that time when I'm wiping the face paint off. I spent a lot of time, I'm not that vain a person or whatever, but I spent a lot of time looking in the mirror every day. I spent a lot of time caring about what my clothes look like or what, like, I spent a good amount of time on that stuff, probably average, but still, I spend time fucking around with that.
Yeah.
When you're out camping, you just wake up and the clothes you have on, and you just put a pack on and go. Like,
yeah.
As long as you're warm or dry, that's the only thing that matters. It doesn't matter what you fucking look like.
Yeah.
When we put face paint on, we weren't over there like drawing, you know, writing your kids' initials on your face, man. We were just covering our stupid faces up so the sheep wouldn't see us.
Well, and as fast as possible so we could get hunting.
Yeah. Yeah, there was no art to it. It was gnarly.
Yeah.
No, that's one of my favorite parts. But the hunt we did kind of combined being out in the wilderness and archery and, you know, camping and like all the best things, I think.
Yeah.
I think for sure.
Yeah, it ticked every single box that I could ever want in hunting, from the camping part to the camaraderie with really good people and like learning. One of the guys on our trip, John, I hadn't met him before, so I got to have new friends, and it just, there was like such a, everybody gelled super well, and there was, you know, a lot of just everything. Was epic. It was epic across the board.
I think that's the only way to fly. And we were talking about this on the drive up here too, is that the hunting community, you know, which you came into more recently than a lot of folks, is like, has missed that a little bit, you know, has missed a little bit of the experience. And again, like you said, everybody gets on podcast now and talks about that. Like, you can say it, and that's almost virtue signaling at some point. Like, hey, it's more about than just the killing. Mm-hmm. Of course.
Yeah.
That's true. But, you know, when you tell your story, like when I hang out with you and we talk about hunting, we don't immediately start flipping out pictures of dead shit.
Yeah.
And flipping through it like trading cards. We don't do that.
No.
Like, that's not because we're trying to make each other, you know, impress each other about art, but it's because we fucking love it.
Yeah.
And there's all million things to talk about. There's a million things to talk about rather than just the killing of the animal.
One of my favorite things about all this is like just being there and learning about new animals and where they live, like in the terrain.
Yeah.
Like whether it's axis deer on Lanai or Maui or whatever it is, like where they live and they thrive and they're in their element and they're like their way.
Yeah.
Of hiding, of rutting, of sleeping, all that stuff. Just learning the ways of an axis deer. You gotta be kidding me. That's the best thing on earth.
Yeah.
Learning the ways of mouflon rams in the mountains in Hawaii, that's incredible. Those creatures and the way they are, the way they rut, the way they butt each other. Dude, how crazy was that when they're ramming each other in the heads?
Yeah.
That was crazy. They butt heads. Yeah. They do this full-on like square-off thing where they go whack, whack. And they literally are fighting over the chicks right in front of you. And just their markings, the white on their big old white saddle and big black beard and the giant horns, and they walk around like they're the shit. Like they're like the king.
They are the king of that place. Yeah, but then juxtaposition to you watching that, and then about 3 or 4 hours later, it gets dark. You're sitting around the campfire, and somebody hands you a plate with bacon wrapped mouflon that you just saw walking around.
Yeah.
Like that is. Man, if there's not a better way to interact with nature, you know, somebody should tell me.
Yeah.
Because you're interacting with it, appreciating it, taking from it only what you need, and being nourished by it. Like, come on, man.
Yeah.
There's a lot of ways to interact with nature. Not all of them are good. A lot of them that are non-hunting ways are great. But that's a pretty damn foolproof way, in my opinion.
It's pretty cool when it comes full circle during the hunt.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of times you go hunting, if you have success, like you clean that animal or you quarter it and take it to a butcher. I don't know, everyone's different, but, and then you know, you go home, you process it in a burger or you freeze it. And then you'd like, you know, a month later, a week later, you defrost it and make a steak for your family. That's great. That's awesome. And I do it all the time. But those days where you walk back to camp with a back strap and you get that back strap out and you put some Montreal steak season on it, put on the fire, and all the boys are eating it right then. The thing was walking around 2 hours ago. It's like there's something about that that is just so.
It's living, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, we're just really kind of like this podcast is just catching you and I coming off of the high of doing this shit.
Yeah.
So hopefully people that are listening can hear it in our voices. Like we're not making this up. We're not saying we're excited. We're not trying to convince anybody to go do what we did.
No.
It's not for everybody.
That's for sure.
Boy, I love talking about it, and I love doing it. And I hope it comes through in this, because it certainly, when I go home, I'm going to be, like you said, to flip it through my phone. Yeah. I do that with my kid, too, though. I look at pictures of my kid, like, oh, that's cute. I love that kid. But then I flip, oh, hunting, love that, too.
Yeah.
Want to see that, want to have those memories.
Yeah.
Because they're
the huge. Memories are what it's all about, man.
Yeah.
I love it.
And you and I have hunted New Zealand, Lanai, here now together. Like, there's some great memories in that. And, you know, I have a lot of perspective on life that I wouldn't have otherwise. And these are not, you know, going to hunting public land in New Zealand is not some, you know, aristocracy activity.
Yeah.
It's not only for fancy rich people. Anybody can have that if they want that adventure and they desire that. You can go get it.
Yeah. It's out there.
Yeah, and you can come here and hunt too. I mean, it's not, you know, there's public places to hunt here and ways to do it. You just got to do your research.
Yeah.
So we're an hour in. We got to go pick up your daughter. Is she at school or ballet?
She's at school.
All right, we're going to take some questions here real quick. I've been doing this, and it may or may not work. People that are listening can write in and tell me if it's lame or it actually works.
Is this on your Instagram?
Yeah. Looking at them Insta story questions. Hopefully there's some good ones. Let's see. Oh, well, we already covered this one. This is Sweet Camo Girl.
What's up, Sweet Camo Girl?
She's a big listener. She says, where do you find more peace? In the woods or in the water?
Yeah, I think we
answered that.
Yeah, but that's a huge part of the reason that I love bow hunting is the same as surfing the stress level goes way down.
Way down.
For sure.
We say woods, like unequivocally. Huh? We say unequivocally woods is the place over the water.
Yeah, because surfing, I'm usually surfing with people.
Yeah.
Probably half the bow hunting I do, if not more, I'm by myself.
Yeah.
I love that. I love a bow hunting by myself.
Yeah. Me too. We were talking about that in camp today. Jonathan Hart was in camp with the founder of Sitka, and he was saying he loves hunting in pairs. Like, he loves the strategy. Mm-hmm. He loves, like, you go this way, I'll go that way. You glass, I'll go. He loves that back and forth. And both you and I were saying, yeah, but hunting by yourself is pretty freaking awesome too.
Yeah. Like, there's not one that's better than the other. That's what makes it so cool is, I mean, hunting with a friend too, and being right there when your friend gets the full draw. Yeah. And you see that all happening in real time.
Oh, it's.
And then if you're the guy there and your friend's right behind you and the pressure's on and he's going to watch you make that shot, that's.
Oh.
To share that experience with a really close friend like that is, it's really freaking cool.
And your friendships are made closer by that stuff.
Yeah.
Like.
And to hug it out right afterwards, you see the animal go down, you hug and scream like little girls.
Well, when you were day two, we were hunting in the pouring rain after this giant ram.
Yeah.
And you went up this hill. It's like we thought we were going to kill it.
Yeah.
You went up this little rise, and I stayed at the bottom.
And they were just on the other side.
They were just like 30 yards on the other side, and this is a ram of a lifetime. And I'm down there. I could never have been more excited in any moment of my life. Other than like the birth of my son or something like that, I was back there going, like, my hands were shaking. I'm like, draw, he's gonna do it. He's gonna be there.
Yeah,
he's gonna be there. And like, super disappointed when he wasn't there. But that, even just being on the sidelines, for somebody else.
Well, when you're with your buddy and one of you shoots and makes it happen and it all goes down, you're like, and there's someone right there to give you that feedback.
Yeah,
which is amazing. But when there's nobody there to give you that feedback, it's amazing.
Yeah.
You're just standing there.
Yeah. Do you ever just like...
standing there with your bow and you're looking down your bow. I just did that. Just happened. I need to go there, clean that animal right now. You walk up and you get your meat bag out and your knife, and it's just you, your knife, your meat bag, and the animal.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's just like you could have fucked the shot up. You could have fucked up that too.
Yeah.
That thing's just sitting there, and the longer you wait, you know, you can easily mess up the meat care part of it. And that part is like a whole nother podcast.
Yeah. Well, that's too... I'm sure you do the same as I do. Sometimes when I shoot an animal and I'm by myself and I don't know what to do, I just look around. I just make sure to look around and take it all in and just look around, look at where I am and think about how I got here and just be present for a minute rather than like, oh, I got a million things to do. It's like, give it a minute.
Yeah.
Give it a minute, because especially for me, hunting in Hawaii for mouflon in a beautiful place is not something... Yeah, you know, maybe I'll never get to do it again. Hope not. Yeah. But like, it's worthy of some reverence in the moment.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Let's see one. We'll see what else we got. We got Who Whiskey Pete asks, what's your ideal surf and turf combo that you could harvest yourself? Like, if you spearfish maybe and you went.
I'd say Ono tacos. And Ono is a Hawaiian word for wahoo, I think you got.
Yeah,
wahoo. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so wahoo tacos. And then I'd go with Axis Deer backstrap or Axis Deer tenderloin.
Yeah.
One or the other, yeah.
If anybody has an argument against that, then go fuck yourself. That's delicious.
Yeah, pretty hard to beat that.
That's delicious. See if we got one more good one here. Oh, we already covered a lot of these awesome questions. That means we're doing our jobs. What was the moment that hooked you? What was the ultimate moment that hooked you on bow hunting? Was there one moment? Shane Dorian. This is from Toby McNeil.
Honestly, the thing that really sunk itself into me, where I knew there was no turning back, is after I read Cameron Haynes' book, Backcountry Bow Hunting.
Yeah.
I got so inspired by that book. I knew very little about bow hunting at the time, but I could shoot about 25 yards. And I read that book, and in the book, for those who haven't read it, you should read it right away. It's epic. But he talks about all this stuff. I was just such a novice. It was all news to me. But he went into like his experiences of like planning and training for and setting up these rad backcountry bow hunting missions with his buddy or by himself. And it got me so inspired. I went out and got like all the ultralight gear, like an ultralight. I was so excited. I got ultralight sleeping bag and ultralight little camp stove and like the tent. And I just went rogue. I started like doing, I did one big trip in the mountains by myself here in Hawaii and carried all my own water and was in the mountains and I killed a big ram and I walked back to my tent with fresh meat and cooked it up on the fire and like that was it. Now I remember like looking around under the stars eating my ram that I just killed and in my tent and I just was like, you got to be kidding me. This is like if I thought I had lived 100% before that, I hadn't, you know. Yeah. It was like a whole new level.
I'd take that away from this podcast. Living to 100%.
Yeah. Well, I think at the base of our human DNA, we're trying to like max our potential.
Yeah.
You know, whether you're a 7-year-old soccer player trying to maximize your potential, like the absolute top. And there's those fleeting moments in life as a human, I think, where you're like, this is it right here. It's happening. And as soon as you get it, it feels like it's almost gone. And that was one of those moments where I was like, this is it. It's happening right this second.
Yeah. That's awesome.
And I took another bite.
I love it. I could talk about that forever, man. That is a great concept. And I think hunting is just a celebration of our humanity at some level because we've been doing it for freaking ever.
Yeah.
Millions of years. So that's a good place to end it. Thank you, Shano.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. It was fun. Let's do it again.
It's a hell of a... Yeah, we're going to do it again.
Let's go hunting
just
again.
Plan to do
a podcast.
Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Next day.
In a couple of months, I'm going to be like, hey, Ben, let's do a podcast pretty soon here.
Have we podcasted lately?
That's going to be code.
That's code. We need to do another episode, man.
Honey, me and Ben are going to do a podcast again.
Yeah,
soon.
Honey. We're working on the scheduling. It's a 7-day podcast. It's in the Himalayas. Yeah. It's going to be great. It's
on location. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, bro.
Cool. Thank you.
That's it. That's all episode 34 in the books. Thank you to Shane Dorian, his wife Lisa, and his two awesome kids, Charlie and Jackson, for letting me stay at their place, run around Hawaii with them, learn about the culture, learn about the hunting there, and do all that we did. It was an awesome trip, and I appreciate their hospitality. I hope you learned a lot from the conversation. And Shane is one of my favorite people on the planet Earth. And in the meantime, until we get to the next awesome conversation with somebody that we all can learn from, you should go to themeateater.com and you should go to the Listen tab and you should start with the Hunting Collective, of course, because you love it so much. But you should also check out Meat Eater podcast. You should also check out Anchored podcast. And you should also check out Wired to Hunt podcast to find out what's going on with all those wonderful folks and get an update from the Meat Eater Incorporated team. And then when you're done all that, if you have some extra time, go click around the website, read the articles, get some knowledge, learn how to cook, learn how to hunt, learn how to fish, get informed. All those beautiful things are done at themeateater.com. And then when you're done all those things and you have some extra time, sign up for, and this will save you time later, sign up for the Meat Eater newsletter. On the homepage, you'll see a little sign-up sheet. You just hit sign up. Now, when you signed up, your email inbox will be gifted every Wednesday morning. Gifted new articles, fresh articles from themeateater.com, where you can do all the lovely things we talked about. You're going to learn how to do lots of stuff. Trust me. So, that is it. That is all. Episode number 34 was great. I can't wait for episode number 35. So come join us next Tuesday morning. We'll see you then.
Hey, everybody knows Weber grills. I've been using Weber grills my whole life, and check it out. They got a pellet grill, the Weber Searwood pellet grill. Now, with a pellet grill, you can smoke, roast, and sear on the same grill. You can go from low and slow, okay, on smoke boost mode, or crank this thing all the way to a heat sear at 600 degrees. It's got a full great sear zone, so you can put more food on the flame. Get fired up for your new Weber Searwood pellet grill. You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins.